You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the New York Times Book Review, read by Nefeli Schneider, featuring book reviews authored by critics from the New York Times. The Let Them Theory by Mel Robbins. This book was reviewed by Katherine Pearson. As Mel Robbins tells it, the concept for her new self-help book, The Let Them Theory, came to her on the night of her son Oakley's junior prom. Overcome by the realization that her youngest child would soon be leaving her, Robbins coped by micromanaging the scene. She pressured Oakley to give his date a corsage, fretted about the weather, worried that the teenagers hadn't made a dinner reservation. Fed up, her daughter Kendall finally snapped, "Mom, if Oakley and his friends want to go to a taco bar for the pre-prom, let them." Robbins writes in this book, "If they get hungry, let them. Soaked, let them. Let them, let them, let them." This mantra of radical acceptance was instantly soothing to Robbins, who, by dint of her iron will and innate confidence, has emerged as one of social media's go-to motivational influencers, a term she loathes, incidentally. Robbins began repeating it whenever she felt stressed about other people's thoughts or actions. In May 2023, her minute-long video about the term took off on social media. Some of her followers even got "Let Them" tattoos. Let Them is not the first time Robbins, at 56, has spun a catchphrase into content gold. She shot to fame more than a decade ago with her 5-second rule, the idea that whenever you feel an impulse to act on a goal, whether something small like getting out of bed when the alarm goes off, or big like finally giving notice at work, you simply count down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, then go, do it. The TEDx talk in which Robbins debuted that particular hack has been watched more than 33 million times, and she turned it into her first bestseller. "There is an obsession with being smart, I think, in the thought leadership space," Robbins said when we met in November at the loft-like headquarters of her media production company in Boston's Seaport District, "and I would rather be useful." If Robbins looks familiar with her bright blonde hair and signature dark-rimmed glasses, the algorithm may have sent you one of her pithy takes on life's problems, like how to stop trying to fix your parents, or her frequently memed exhortation against spending money on stupid stuff. Maybe you saw a recent video of her, clad in a sports bra and hot pink hair rollers, weeping about her recent sit-down with Oprah Winfrey, who declared The Let Them Theory one of the best self-help books she has ever read. Reed Tracy, the chief executive of Hay House, Robbins' publisher, said the title, out December 24th, has more than 100,000 pre-orders ready to ship the first week, a record for the company. The book's premise? If you stop trying to manage other people's opinions, actions, and moods, then your well-being and relationships will improve. Friends hanging out without you? Let them. Relatives griping about you? Let them. Your date ghosts you? Let them. Don't stress about what you cannot control. Focus on what you can. If that seems like a thin concept for a 300-plus page book, so obvious it's laughable, well, that's kind of the point. Yeah, it is a cheap trick, and it works, Robbins said. So you can criticize it or be cynical all you want. I don't care. Who is Mel Robbins? On the morning of my visit, it was clear that going with the flow is not Robbins' natural modus operandi. She was waiting for me when I stepped into her office with its soaring windows, exposed brick, and millennial beige decor. She swept me into a firm hug before prompting her staff to give me a round of applause. Robbins took pains to introduce me to every member of the staff of 17 who work in the Boston office. At one point, she fussed briefly over a colleague who declined to partake in a catered lunch. Let them, Robbins reminded herself with a shrug. Robbins' primary focus these days is on her growing media company, Its crown jewel is the Mel Robbins podcast, a mix of interviews with doctors, therapists, and researchers, personal stories, and motivational tactics. It debuted in 2022 and was an instant hit. Last year, it was the sixth most followed show on Apple Podcasts, and it had the second most shared podcast episode of 2024, a conversation with Dr. Mary Claire Haver, the menopause queen. Over the years, Robbins has held many other roles, including lawyer and CNN legal analyst, life coach, and radio show host. She even had a short-lived TV talk show. Just don't call her an influencer. I think everybody's an influencer because your behavior influences other people. And so do your words, and so do your emotions, she said. But she said the popular definition of an influencer made her bristle. The fact that 50% of kids today want to be one? I wish they would want to be teachers. Still, Robbins has never been shy about sharing her point of view. Raised in North Muskegon, Michigan, Robbins attended Dartmouth and then Boston College for law school. She tried working in a public defender's office and then a large corporate firm before deciding she hated practicing law. At 31, she hired a life coach who told Robbins that she would make a good life coach. Robbins wasn't necessarily surprised. She said she had always been the type of friend people came to for advice. In a 2007 interview with Boston Magazine, Robbins described herself as a brilliant and gifted guide who had been given a tremendous intuition. I think one of my secret weapons, honestly, is that I'm not a therapist, she told me. I'm not a researcher. I'm a person who is trying to do a little bit better, and I'm a person who has been in really scary places. And I think we are all equipped to help the person we used to be. In her late 30s, when Robbins was pregnant with her third child, her husband Chris was laid off from his tech job. He then started a pizza restaurant chain that failed during the economic crash in 2008. The couple went into a financial freefall, Robbins said, and she began drinking heavily. She blacked out frequently because she mixed alcohol and Zoloft, a medication she had been taking for decades to treat anxiety. But she was treating the wrong problem, she said. At 47, Robbins received a diagnosis of ADHD and dyslexia. Oakley got the same diagnosis around that time. It was an emotional turning point for Robbins. When you don't get the intervention you need, what is the primary symptom? Anxiety, she said. Now she relies on her therapist. I love therapy. And the drug Adderall. She has posted about both, reminding her audience that medication is a tool, not a crutch. In the Mel Robbins universe, every experience and every vulnerable moment offers a lesson, and her content machine feeds itself. On Instagram, where she has 7 million followers, or TikTok, 2.7 million followers, her audience is going to get a quick hit of encouragement, she said, something they might share with a friend. If a post goes crazy, she said, we turn it into a podcast episode. And if that episode goes viral, Robbins might turn it into a series, or in the case of the Let Them Theory, a book. What does Mel Robbins know? The first half of the Let Them idea is about freeing yourself from the burden of trying to manage other people. As for the second half, Robbins turns to another concept, Let Me. It goes like this. After releasing what you cannot control, you say, let me, and take responsibility for your next steps. Without that idea, you run the risk of simply shutting down and isolating yourself, the book warns. Robbins recounted, for instance, how distraught she felt when she saw friends posting on social media about a weekend trip they went on without her. Instead of spiraling, she reminded herself, let them. Let them do their thing. Then she told herself, let me be more proactive about making plans with friends and set better boundaries with work to make time for socializing. As I learned during our time together, the concept goes against her tendency to orchestrate any situation. And Robbins knows she can drive those closest to her nuts. The people that use the let them theory the most are the people that work with me and my family, she said, and I'm cool with that. As her popularity has grown, so has her family's exposure. All three of her children have gone on the podcast to talk about their lives. Oakley talked about anxiety. Kendall discussed her imposter syndrome. And Robin's daughter, Sawyer, discussed heartbreak. Chris, who is now a death doula and runs a spiritual wilderness retreat for men, has shared stories about his struggles with depression. On his Instagram account, he pushed back against criticism that his wife had bullied him into disclosing his diagnosis. "There are things that need to be private as you're working through them with a person," Robin said, "and then there are stories and experiences that are extraordinarily valuable for other families to hear." For the Mel Robbins machine to work, family buy-in is essential. The personal is professional, and Robin's studied candor is vital to what makes her tick. "I am not running clinical trials," she said. "I don't even know the specific types of research styles." In the book, though, she uses the word research somewhat liberally to refer not only to the work of others, but to her own anecdotal data. She also calls "let them" a proven method. Several psychologists and psychiatrists told me that the self-help world has always been full of people who have no clinical expertise but offer advice nonetheless. "That is not necessarily disqualifying," they said, "but a healthy dose of skepticism is a good thing. I think what we want is for those influencers to be responsible," said Dr. Robert Waldinger, a psychiatry professor at Harvard Medical School, who has appeared in Robin's podcast. "And I think she tries to be really responsible." "The let them idea is not a panacea," he said, "but it is a pretty darn good guiding principle for a lot of things." I think what Mel is saying is that most of the time life goes better if we let people make their own choices, Dr. Waldinger said. Rocket science it is not, but Robbins doesn't care. "I am so overwhelmed half the time and busy and ADHD. I don't remember something that's complicated," she said. "If it's simple, I can remember it, which means if I can remember it, I can use it. And tools only work if you use them. I think complicated solutions are stupid." And if people don't like what she has to say, well, let them. The reviewer, Catherine Pearson, is a reporter for the New York Times who writes about families and relationships. She writes about romantic relationships, friendship, sexual health, and parenting. Her reporting explores what the science says about how to build and maintain strong relationships and why connection is such an essential part of overall health and well-being. The Troublemaker: How Jimmy Lai Became a Billionaire, Hong Kong's Greatest Dissident, and China's Most Feared Critic, by Mark L. Clifford. This book was reviewed by Kevin Perino. On the morning of August 10, 2020, scores of armed police arrived at the headquarters of Apple Daily, one of Hong Kong's most prominent pro-democracy newspapers. They rifled through the office, hunting for evidence of treason, and frog-marched the paper's billionaire publisher, Jimmy Lai, through his own third-floor newsroom. Lai soon faced charges under a new security law of colluding with foreign powers. A few months later, Mark L. Clifford writes in The Troublemaker, a brisk account of Lai's life and work. The gravity of his predicament began to set in, and Lai sent a laconic WhatsApp message to his associates, "Delete everything." Lai has pleaded not guilty, testifying at his trial this past fall that he was simply trying to carry a torch to the reality of Hong Kong's mood. His newspaper had offered robust support for the protesters in the city's 2014 umbrella movement, which had decried the way Beijing was tightening its grip on the territory after taking control from the United Kingdom in 1997. Since his arrest 4 years ago, Lai has remained in prison, often in solitary confinement. Although President-elect Trump has boasted that it will be easy for him to free Lai, most observers are less sanguine. Lai himself made the decision to remain in Hong Kong rather than to try to flee, knowing that he could well spend the rest of his life in a prison cell. I called my people to fight, Lai explained to the former Soviet dissident Natan Sharansky shortly before his arrest. I can't let them down. The troublemaker is a hagiography in the word's original sense. Though it does not entirely overlook Lai's warts, it ultimately presents its subject as a kind of living saint. Clifford is a former Hong Kong newspaper editor, as well as a human rights advocate who served on the board of one of Lai's companies, and he emphasizes Lai's self-sacrifice and courage in his defense of democracy and economic freedom. Lai's story, Clifford writes, ultimately reveals a man who rises above the physical prison to find himself mentally freer than ever. Lai's journey from an impoverished childhood in China's southern Guangdong province during the Chinese Civil War era to becoming one of Hong Kong's richest men is a genuinely gripping yarn. Mao's revolution in 1949 upended his family life. Lai recalls watching communist officials force his mother to kneel on broken glass. Food was so scarce that she intentionally burned rice at the forced labor site where she was a cook so that she could bring it home to feed her children. In the worst days, Lai recalls dining on grilled field mice. At age 6, he would forage for cigarette butts, remove the tobacco dregs, and sell the re-rolled product for a meager profit. His distraught father tried to hang himself in the same room where his young son was resting. At 12, Lai decided to steal away to Hong Kong. He worked in factories and lost a fingertip. Dominated by the British since the 19th century, the colony was suffused with Anglo-European culture. I noticed that everybody who made it spoke English, Lai recalled. He listened intently to Voice of America and browsed the dictionary in his free time. Lai eventually came to run his own factory and hustled amid the American department store buyers looking for low-cost suppliers, making his early fortune in fast fashion. He became an evangelist for what he called Western culture and values and institutions, handing out copies of Friedrich Hayek's The Road to Serfdom, and eventually befriending the classical liberal economist Milton Friedman. Although Clifford does not dwell on it, Lai also began to display some of the uglier characteristics of unbridled capitalism. A few years after founding his first retail chain, he was being driven around in a golden Rolls Royce and keeping a private zoo filled with, Clifford writes, peacocks, a flying fox, deer, a monkey, and a pet bear who liked to drink cream soda. Lai's journalism, too, was marked by a kind of prurient excess. At the publications he started, Next Magazine and the tabloid Apple Daily, he bought his paparazzi scooters, the better to arrive at car crashes while the bodies were still warm, and his paper featured detailed, user-friendly reviews of Hong Kong's bustling prostitution scene. Yet after Beijing's 1989 crackdown on protesters in Tiananmen Square, Lai discovered a new sense of mission. I didn't feel anything about China until Tiananmen Square happened, Lai told an interviewer. Suddenly, it was like my mother was calling me in the darkness of the night, and my heart opened up. Lai built a network of relationships with pro-democracy activists and Western power players. By the time the umbrella movement erupted, Lai was out on the streets with the other protesters, holding court from a lawn chair by a KFC restaurant. Despite Lai's evident courage and resourcefulness, there is something slightly unsatisfying about Clifford's portrayal of him as a martyr for capitalism and the Western way. We now know all too well that the kind of free market fundamentalism that Lai espouses can lead to the inequality that fuels xenophobic nationalism. The Western world itself is now led by a man who is starting to use lawsuits and intimidation to cow the press. Among the unexpected victims in Clifford's tale are the Western values for which Lai has sacrificed so much. The reviewer, Kevin Perino, is the author most recently of A Force So Swift, Mao, Truman, and the Birth of Modern China, 1949. Holiday romance novels to make your December merry and bright. New festive stories center the many ways people celebrate the season and each other. The reviewer of the following books is Sarah Wendell. First book, Make the Season Bright by Ashley Herring Blake. When Charlotte Donovan agrees to celebrate Christmas at a friend's family home in Colorado, the last person she's expecting to see is her former fiancé, Brighton Fairbrook, who left her at the altar 5 years ago. At first, the musician ex-lovers pretend they're strangers, but as holiday events keep throwing them together, their frosty ruse starts to melt. Second book, Love You, Alatka, by Amanda Elliott. Abby Cohen owns a cafe in rural Vermont, where she's one of only two Jewish people in town. When she's tasked with planning the area's first Hanukkah festival, she learns that the other one is her annoying, perpetually sunshiny regular, Seth. Abby agrees to help Seth get his parents off his back by posing as his girlfriend at his family's Hanukkah celebration, in exchange for his help making the festival a delicious success. Their pretend relationship only needs to last 8 nights, but the flame of their connection can't be doused that quickly. Third book, Grim Curiosities by Sharon Lynn Fisher. The year is 1851. Since her father's death, Lizzie Grimm has struggled to keep his antique shop in York, the most haunted town in England, afloat. A snowy December night brings Anthony Carlyle to her door, seeking answers for his sister who, like Lizzie's mother, has been unresponsive since encountering a ghost. The duo find hope inside rare books about the history of Yule, but a sinister collector and a dark entity threaten to leave their families silent and their future dark and cold. The reviewer, Sarah Wendell, is a co-founder of the romance community Smart Bitches, Trashy Books, and the author of Lighting the Flames, a Hanukkah romance. Big Tech is embracing Trump. How long will it last? The reviewer of these two books is Sarah Fryer. Trump's relationships with tech companies has been volatile and could be again if he senses disloyalty from his newfound allies. First book, The Everything War by Dana Mattioli. The Wall Street Journal reporter Dana Mattioli focuses on Amazon's insatiable quest for growth and market control, from Bezos' bet on the World Wide Web in the 1990s to the company's transformation into a behemoth that regularly tangles with American presidents. Mattioli describes Bezos as Trump's nemesis, noting that the president-elect was obsessed with a post's criticism of him during his 2016 campaign. At dinner the following year, Bezos tried to explain press freedom to Trump, to no avail. The president couldn't believe that an owner of a newspaper wouldn't use it to attack his enemies and wouldn't influence coverage, Mattioli writes. In 2018, when Amazon was the front runner for a cloud computing contract with the Pentagon, she reports, Trump told his Secretary of Defense, Jim Mattis, to screw the company and scuttle the deal. This thoroughly reported book explores Amazon's strategies to thwart threats to its dominance and make friends at the White House despite Trump's attitude towards Bezos, who stepped down as CEO in 2021, but is still the company's largest shareholder. Mattioli also delves into Amazon's history with the other person the company is scared of in Washington, the current chair of the Federal Trade Commission, Lina Khan. Under Khan, the FTC has sued Amazon for illegally maintaining monopoly power, a development she had been scrutinizing since law school. Trump is expected to replace her, though his vice president-elect, J.D. Vance, has expressed support for her efforts. Second book, Character Limit, How Elon Musk Destroyed Twitter, by Kate Conger and Ryan Mack. The scoop magnate New York Times journalist Kate Conger and Ryan Mack, dissect the 2022 sale that brought an end to Twitter as we knew it, and in a dramatic fly-on-the-wall narrative, draw the contours of what Musk is building in its place on X. Musk cut thousands of employees, destroying a lot of the platform's functions in the process. Even as he claimed to be making changes in support of free speech, Conger and Mack write, Musk sought out and fired his critics inside the company and directed his team to make his own posts more visible on the site. Twitter had banned Donald Trump after the January 6th insurrection in 2021. The authors report that Musk reinstated Trump's account on a whim the following year and began courting the former president to return to the platform. Conger and Mack also detail Musk's restoration of other previously banned far-right accounts and his increasing enchantment with and promotion of conspiracy theories. While the book ends before Musk endorsed Trump's re-election, Character Limit offers insights into how Musk might approach his job helping to run Trump's Department of Government Efficiency. The department's authority over the federal budget is limited by law, but Musk has the president's ear, and he clearly wants to strip the executive branch of personnel he deems unnecessary, much as he did at X. Character Limit is clear on Musk's preferred style for a reorganization. Slash more deeply than anyone thinks possible, and make everyone who remains pick up the pieces. The book also describes attributes of Musk, a desire for loyalty, an allergy to criticism, a penchant for making impetuous decisions that are reminiscent of Trump, and help explain why the two, for now, can understand each other and collaborate. These personality traits also suggest why their partnership might not last. With Trump in charge and tech moguls falling into line, at least for the moment, is there any hope for checking the tech industry's worst impulses in the near future? The reviewer, Sarah Fryer, is the author of No Filter, The Inside Story of Instagram. Thank you for joining us for the New York Times Book Review, read by Nefeli Schneider.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.